Good evening. You live to tell the tale. When Wendy left this afternoon, she said, "Oh, I'm off to samsara," she said. I told her to take some nirvana with her. Dan told me that he set up the schedule at the meeting house tonight to coincide with ours. So they started sitting at 7 just as we did and are now beginning to talk. I don't know what they're talking about. Probably us. It all fits, you know. And I wanted to mention also that Carolyn's presence today was such a treat for us. Some of you don't know her. She came out to Hokoji once, maybe 6 or 7 years ago. Maybe you met her. You remember her. But I don't think you were there yet. She's an old hand and a wonderful one. It's thanks to her that we have all the instructions for how to do all the different jobs. She was the Eno at a place called Camp Double Bear, which was up in the mountains somewhere, not very far from here, in a redwood forest. And she began the process of writing down what each job is, Sogu, Jikido, Tenzo, etc., etc., etc. And it's been refined and refined since then by many minds and hands, but Carolyn started it. She's not with us because her husband has cancer, and she's in the middle of advocating for him and finding the right doctors and trying to understand what it's all about and trying to get him through chemotherapy and et cetera, et cetera. So he's doing well, and so is she, but she said they cry a lot. So it was wonderful that she could join us and spend this little time. It meant a great deal to her. And she sends her thanks to everyone for creating this beautiful space.
She called it a Buddha field.
A Buddha field, yes. Yes.
She said she could feel the harmony as soon as she stepped through.
Mm-hmm. It's what Koban often described, that it's a funny thing. He said, living at Eheji Monastery, everything was extremely ordinary and kind of grating. There were always more things to do than there was time for, and people didn't always get along with each other, and it's this holy practice, but it was just ordinary everyday life. Then outsiders would come and say, "Oh, fantastic, peaceful atmosphere. Oh, this is wonderful." And I thought that this morning when Carolyn said that, because it's the same here. We've been sort of... I don't know about you, but... But she could feel it. She could feel the work that we're doing, even though we lose track of it sometimes. It's a very, very wonderful process. So I brought some words Sometimes I don't know what to do about words. They're just about my favorite thing. And yet they all seem sort of feeble at about this point in a session. And yet important, of course. I've told sometimes that in one session with Koban years ago, I didn't have any job because I was so new. It may have been my first seven-day session. And so I just sat there and got more and more and more quiet. And I wasn't aware of not having words or thoughts, but I must have, because at the tea time, we continued to sit in our place, and they passed around the tea, and it was Valentine's Day, and they passed around those little hearts with messages on them, and I got one and looked at it, and it had one word on it. It said, wait. And I was thunderstruck, absolutely thunderstruck, that the word just went into my brain and down into my belly. It was like, wow, we have this in us somehow. It was like a miracle. But we do tend to string them all together and make all kinds of concepts, and then we get tangled up in the concepts that we've made and create more problems for ourselves than we need to. So I'm always of two minds about it. I thought our walk this afternoon was extremely interesting. I hope it was for you all too. It's amazing how much more you can see when you're not going fast. I doubt we would have seen the butterfly trying to take a walk with Lauren. And probably might have even missed the raggedy coyote in the meadow across the way. The faster we go, the fewer things we experience. And so that whole same old walk that we've taken a number of times suddenly became a whole nother walk today. Just the shape of the eucalyptus leaves. Incredible. And all the things that were growing and blooming on that path that looks like nothing is growing and blooming. It looks like it's dead as a doornail. But Areogonum is there. And Indian paintbrush, a whole bushful of Indian paintbrush I never noticed before. Orange. How could I miss that? Krishnamurti used to say, one should be very, very alert. And I think that's how Thich Nhat Hanh walks. I walked with him in Plum Village for a few days in the frost and the snow, very cold. But he would walk slowly and stop and look, and then walk and then stop and look again. And so the world just began to unfold and open up, even though it was not a very vivid and bright world. It was just all frost and snow. But it became our world. Oneself becomes the world that way. rather than separated from it and speeding through. So I'm glad we did it that way. I'm glad we have the contrast that we did it both ways. So now we know something more. I brought some quotations from Dogen Zenji. I hope you'll bear with me. It's complicated sometimes, but at the same time, he puts his finger on things in a way that other people don't so well, including me. He said, "The mind of sentient being is destined to desire to know its own self." We're all destined to desire to know our own self. However, those whose eyes see their true selves are exceedingly rare. Buddha alone sees it. Non-Buddhists vainly pine for that which is not the self. What Buddha means by the self is precisely the entire universe. Thus, whether one is aware of it or not, there is no universe that is not this self. Sometimes I say, you know, it's so much bigger than we imagine. We think ourselves this we thing, but it's huge. In the Prajnaparamita scriptures, there's a little dialogue between Buddha and Manjushri. Often Manjushri shows up and talks to Buddha, and they have sort of Dharma combat. And Buddha asked him, "Have you realized the unobstructed?" And Manjushri answered, "I am the unobstructed. How can the unobstructed realize the unobstructed?" So some kinds of effort are unnecessary and fall away. The unobstructed can't realize the unobstructed. The eye can't see itself. It sees. We live. As they say, all things themselves are ultimate reality. And it's not someplace else. It's not sometime else. We're not going to get all better. This is it. This is what we've got. One of my favorite quotations is Antonio Machado's, "Suffering is above, not below." And everyone thinks it's below, and everyone tries to rise. suffering is above, not below. And everyone thinks it's below, and everyone tries to rise. The more inflated we get, the more lost we get. Coben used to say, it's about coming down. Stepping down, walking down. Humility comes from the word humus. Which is that lovely, dark, rotten stuff that smells so sweet in the forest. An ancient Buddha, Dogen said, once said that mountains, rivers, the great earth, and all humans are born together. Likewise, the Buddhas of the three periods and all humans have been endeavoring together. On this account, because I see mountains, rivers, and the great earth when a single person is born, it does not seem to be that he or she comes into being as an unessential element piled upon those rivers, mountains, and the great earth that existed before the person was born. Did you get that? I think that is so cool. That a newborn, on this account, an ancient Buddha once said that mountains, rivers, the great earth, and all humans are born together. It all comes up at once. Likewise, the Buddhas of the three periods, past, present, and future, and all humans have been endeavoring together. On this account, because I see mountains, rivers, and the great earth when a single person is born, it does not seem to be that he or she comes into being as an unessential element piled upon those mountains, rivers, and the great earth that existed before the person was born. That each new birth is extremely essential. It is not unessential. Meaning, we ourselves were not piled upon the rivers and the mountains when we came to birth, but rose with the mountains and the rivers and the Buddhas of the three times, all of us together. We are born in the world without knowing our beginning or our end. Although we do not know the bounds of the world, we still look at and tread upon this place. Do not hold a grudge against mountains, rivers, and the great earth, because they are not like human life. You should clearly understand that what the Buddha said shows the oneness of the universe and my existence. Buddha's activities take place with the entire great earth and with all sentient beings. If they are not with all existence, they are not yet the activities of Buddha. And someone commented on that, that Martin Buber said the same thing. He said that we're born not only into the world, but we are born with the world. So it's not a small thing, this life we call my life. So one more. This birth and death itself, birth and death meaning life from beginning to end, this birth and death itself is the life of Buddha. If you loathe and abandon it, you will lose the life of Buddha. If you abide by it, clinging to birth and death, you will also lose the life of Buddha, being left with a mere shell of Buddha. When you neither loathe nor crave it, only then do you enter the heart of Buddha for the first time. But do not calculate it with your mind or explain it with words. When you cast off and forget your body and mind and plunge into the abode of Buddha, so that Buddha may act upon you and you may devote yourself completely to him, you become Buddha, liberated from birth and death without effort and anxiety. Dogen insisted that there was no way other than by grasping birth and death by practice in the spirit of surrender. To use and to surrender were one and the same. Self-power and other power. Questions, comments? Jane?
So when you're in real trouble and maybe you think of Avalokiteshvara, and you know that this is a beautiful, compassionate trip, these words, but still, Avalokiteshvara is out of power. So, Avalokiteshvara is out of power. Or whomever you might call upon.
That's not a trick.
So I'm having a hard time my desire is to realize, as Copen invited us to, that we are each of us the three treasures. So that's my desire, to realize that. And yet, we can turn to Avalokiteshvara or some of the Bhadra or whomever. So there is something outside of us that we can turn to, that we can stand upon.
It's not outside.
Well, then what's other power?
That's inside too.
Well, then why do we say other power and self power?
Oh, because there's a difference. Definitely a difference. We try to do it all ourself, but what Dogen is pointing to is that ourself includes the mountains and the rivers and the Buddhas of the three times and everything that we can even imagine. All of that is our life itself. And so, of course, sometimes we need to call on our life to help our life. And sometimes,
That's the tricky part, because when you're in trouble, it doesn't feel like, it feels like you're looking down at a, or peering into a morass or an abyss. And that doesn't feel like something, that's what I want help from. Never mind calling on it. Maybe I do need to call on it.
But you don't call on the abyss.
That's what it feels like when I'm looking at it, that I'm in, when I'm in trouble.
So then Avalokiteshvara replies to the cries of the world, so you have to cry out in order to be heard. You have to give up your own effort to heal yourself and offer yourself for healing. We can't do it all ourselves.
No.
Well, you can sit with it. Nancy?
The psalmist said, lift up my eyes into the hills from whence cometh my strength. And if I put that together with what you're saying, it means still the strength is,
yes,
in fact in me, and that the mountain isn't external.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Thank you for that. Yeah. They call this Zazen practice that we do self-power practice, because we come with the intention of sitting and the intention to be Buddha. And Dogen's whole take on it is that sitting itself is Buddha, that we don't have to try to get to Buddhahood or enlightenment, that as we sit, enlightenment is what we are. So we begin always coming, saying, I'm going to go and I'm going to sit and I'm going to, and then we try to, maybe try to be sort of cautious about it and say, well, I don't have any real goal because there's no real goal for this practice. But of course there always is a goal. We always start out with some kind of intention. Pure intention, honest intention. And then as we sit and begin to experience this, we begin to feel that that power that we feel that brought us to the cushion isn't all that sustains us and isn't enough to sustain us. that there's a kind of hubris that goes with it, that it's sort of, ta-da, I'm going to do this, you know, all by myself. And as we sit, we begin to realize, one, there isn't any all by myself. There's no such thing. That's one reason that our practicing together like this is so valuable, because we begin to realize that we're completely connected with each other. And thus with everything else. We just don't usually experience it, just as we don't usually experience the eucalyptus leaves until we slow down enough. And so as we begin to practice and begin to sit more and more on the cushion, we begin to feel a loss of that kind of prideful power. Or if not a loss of it, there's something else. Something else that's calling us. One old teacher said, our mind is not ourself. And it's our mind, our ideas, that bring us here. It's part of the whole mix. But then as we sit, we begin to discover ourself. The self we're longing for, that we've been longing for the whole time. And sometimes we run into enormous pain. And Avalokiteshvara is there. Here. Diana.
Kind of like that, just by putting our attention on the eucalyptus leaf, there's sort of a self liberation of that, or an unlocking of it. Just by what you were saying last night too, that everybody wants to shine. It's just stopping and letting someone shine.
Yes.
Letting the eucalyptus leaf come to our
Yes. Unlocking is a nice way of saying it. It sounds so real.
Would you say it again? I didn't hear.
I was just saying that something about what Angie read reminded me that it seems like that maybe there's things will open themselves, each thing. And that it's just the attention on it, whatever. It's like each thing has its own ability to heal, to open.
And that's Martin Buber again. All life is about meeting. And not just meeting people, but meeting the eucalyptus leaf, the blade of grass, the dog poop, the half hot dog lying on the ground, you know, all of those things. It's, each one of those is a meeting of Buddha with Buddha, reality with reality, the whole life of it, us. So vibrant, so intense. And it's up to us to develop the view, the ability to meet. everything is waiting to be met by us. Everything is waiting to be seen by us. So, as I said last night, so they can shine on us, or shine as they are. Fulfill themselves. There's a kind of fulfillment. Because we're not alone. And maybe that's mostly what you're talking about, Jane, is the feeling of being so alone.
I guess that's what
it comes down to. Yes.
And that isn't her.
It's a mistaking. It's not quite an error, it's just a misunderstanding. But a very natural one, and one that we all have to suffer at one point or another. We have to become alone in order to go through. It helps to go through, be alone with friends as much as you can.
I feel that's been a sign of my increased health, is to be able to ask for help when I need.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's why I love this practice, because so many people have done it. Mm-hmm. And do it.
Yes.
So I don't have to figure that out.
But we each have to do it ourselves.
Yeah, it's all up to you.
Yeah. And sometimes it's really hard. Julian?
What kind of concerns me is like delusions and how they prevent us from meeting one another. I could have the best intentions, but be it some kind of lack of understanding or something, like what I offer is actually harmful. It's...
What kind of harm do you do?
It could be like a kid who wants to take care of... here's an example. When I was a kid, I had this tadpole. I always had this thing that helped grow into a frog, but because of my ignorance,
yes,
I didn't change the water, and the water got dirty. And no problem. So, it just seems, it's kind of frustrating. It seems like things like this, like, kind of happen all the time. I mean, in different kinds of ways.
They do. So many mistakes.
It's just like fumbling, I guess, is the big catastrophe. I don't know, but...
Yeah.
Is that a meeting in a way? Or, I don't know, it just...
We just... I don't know. I completely sympathize because I feel that way myself. I'm just making one mistake after another. And if things go well, I'm just amazed every time. My word, something finally went right.
Could you share also an example of the mistakes you make?
Do I have to?
But in that everyday kind of context, and in hearing this like about Avalokiteshvara and Buddha, it's hard for me to put those together.
Because we think that there's something special and different and holy and mighty and come with blazing lights and beautiful music or something, but actually Avalokiteshvara can be the most simple thing. It can be the ground under your feet holding you up, or it can be any kind of little help. You know, your cushion is Avalokiteshvara. That's why we bow to our cushion, you know, in gratitude for the support that we're getting. You know, it's all the different kinds of support that we're getting as we bumble our way through life. Even so, there's so much that's a part of our life that's supporting it and helping us.
But sometimes the bumbling is unacceptable, no? I mean,
well,
there's some places, I mean, get into politics in a way, you know, like, just people in history making really, really bad mistakes.
But that's them, it's not us. The thing about our practice is that we focus on our life and our view and try to stay as clear as we can. Clear about our own effort, clear about our own mistakes, and try not to accuse others of mistakes or badmouth, you know, our great leaders. But find some compassion for the whole system, for all of them. You know, I know people who've spent a long time working on compassion for our president, for instance. Or Thich Nhat Hanh, when the police beat up that truck driver years ago. He was in Sechin at that time, and I know someone who was there who watched him go through the process of trying to forgive, to see what the police side of it was, how afraid they were, and how they suffered. If you're willing to go beyond your immediate view and pick the whole thing up and turn it around, you begin to see that it's not necessary to blame, but to see clearly. It doesn't mean you like it, but if you see it clearly, you can have some compassion for what's happening. And that's Buddha Avalokiteshvara itself. That's what those words mean. How we use our mind to meet the things that we know, that we hear about and run into, including our own self and our own inadequacies. You know, you can pick up your little boy self and who let the tadpole die, and you can feel compassion for that kid too.
I wanted to see the frog.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I know a little boy who had a pet crow, and he walked it around with a string around its neck. And one time he was doing that, and he walked a long, long way, and then he looked back, and the crow was gone. I mean, he was dragging it along, and he's an old man now, but he's always been very sorry for that. So we just do it. We just do it. We can't help it.
There's that beautiful movie, Spring Sun.
I was just thinking about.
Oh yes.
It's a Buddhist parable, and a little boy ties a rock to a frog, to a fish, and to a snake. Oh, it's a beautiful thing.
Lori?
When you read from Dogen, or sometimes when I read things that they sound so deep and so kind of brilliant, and then when I'm sitting, and you know, there's a lot of distraction and a lot of returning, and after a while, gets real comfortable in the returning place. But it's very simple. I mean, it's just, it's so ordinary. It's, being here feels so ordinary. And I know that's why I keep coming back, because I like it. It's a great relief. But it also seems so different from the meetings, you know, that just seem so profound. I mean, it's not really a question, I guess, but it kind of is. It's like, well, is this it? It feels good. I like doing this. It feels good when I return to a place where it's just the sound of the cars and the sound of the ocean and the breeze coming in and where the people here and the world around us and just nothing more than that. But it sounds like what is written about is so much more than that.
Well, it's your view of what you see. You're giving it a value. So it's up to us to cultivate a view of of discriminating and evaluating how we are and what we do. Finding what's important and precious about it. And it doesn't have to be profound or fancy. Some people have profound experiences and they write about them. And some people don't. But it's all Buddha. The practice itself is Buddha nature. And so they always say, you know, we don't try to be anything different from what we are. And that itself is Buddha. So you can just enjoy it, you know. But also realize that if someone comes into your space, that they might experience something the way Carolyn did this morning, that we aren't noticing because we're generating it ourselves. You know, we're the unobstructed. So how do we know about the unobstructed? We just are that. But others will notice it.
I'm not complaining.
Oh, come on, complain a little.
You know, if it wasn't of value.
Yes.
It just seems.
Yes.
You know, I'll read something. Yeah.
Well, but it bears fruit all through your life. And then you're able to express it. You can actually write those things yourself out of the experience of your life based on this practice. I know that. So it works differently for different people.
What I hear is something profound through the ordinary.
It's all through the ordinary. It's all through the ordinary. Ordinary means it's all connected.
So she is experiencing the ordinary.
Yeah.
She is looking at your father.
It's kind of interesting. It seems almost like it's easier to have profound, for me, to have a profound experiences with nature than with people.
Mm-hmm. People are more complicated than nature.
That's not to be a whole song back.
an awful lot more complicated, and we have a lot more at stake. You know, we create a whole scenario with each meeting with people, and yet, you know, the sort of ultimate meeting is with another person. Practice, sometimes you have to simply be the aloneness. Just be it entirely. If you look it up in a dictionary, you see that it means all one. And there's an experience of all oneness in aloneness. If we allow ourselves to go there, it's not an abyss, it's more like a mountain. At least.
An abyss upside down.
An upside down abyss. Something like that.
Set a vision of a big wall of Cheerios.
One of the values I like find in aloneness is it kind of spurs one to kind of take some kind of responsibility for things instead of, I don't know, waiting for something to come to you. And like sometimes it almost feels like you have to be at this total pit to be able to, like, when there doesn't seem to be any kind of resources around you or anything like that, to start taking, you know, to do something.
To step up, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I think kind of the same thing when I feel alone, it's a recent thing, when I feel lonely, I'll make an effort to be alone, as opposed to trying to distract myself or trying to change it or whatever. And that's kind of like the stepping up. I'm like, okay, I'm going to be alone. And then it's hard. But it's kind of like taking control of it or responsibility.
Nancy,
yeah,
for me, I make a distinction between loneliness and love. And I sometimes feel a lot more lonely in crowds than I am by myself.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
You have said before, you spoke to me and to Jade about this loneliness or this feeling alone, whatever this is, that it's something we go through. It seems like a stage. And for me, it seems like there's no turning back. Is it a stage?
I don't know. I don't know. People go through many different experiences, and loneliness, aloneness, onlyness, this effort that we're making to understand what it is to be what we are, what it is to be a self, to be someone, or something, what it is that lives us. Are we alone? You know, it feels that way. A lot of times there, I'm thinking of Coben when his wife left him. He was devastated. And he went off and lived in the woods for a year, completely alone. He refused, he wouldn't see anybody except a couple of people who would come and sit by the fire with him. Sometimes we have to be alone in order to completely experience how we are as we are, one with everything. You know, it's cheap and easy to say so. Oh, I'm one with the universe. But that one with the universe can be a very only kind of feeling, a very lonely kind of feeling. But it's often part of the questioning that we do and the experiencing that we have if we're honest with ourselves and don't try to distract ourselves with a lot of stuff. Then we begin to quietly experience ourselves, maybe more deeply and carefully, and with a big question mark. What is this? What is it?
What about when we don't get an answer?
You wait.
That's what the candy said. Sometimes we have to wait a long time.
It seems that's what the Bodhisattva vows came from. All my beginning was greed, hate, and ignorance. Someone has been here before me.
Yes. Yes.
I hear about it now.
Yes.
But to me, that's what I see when I sit on the pillow. It's not the only thing I see there.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Jane, because we can go right into that. It's good timing, because it's time to stop for now. But tomorrow, instead of a talk, we're going to do a full moon ceremony and do it in Coben style. Some of you have done it at Jikoji, I think. So we'll gather in here first and I'll talk about it a little bit. And then we'll go outside, and it's very foggy tonight. I'm not sure we'll even see the moon, but we'll see what happens tomorrow. And if it's too cold and foggy, we'll maybe go out and look and then come back in. But we'll recite the precepts, and then we'll pass the teaching stick. And if anyone has something to say of appreciation or apology or just general commentary, then you have a chance to do that. I'll talk about it tomorrow night. It's a very, very, very old tradition.
So
have we
passed the
full window? No, it's Friday, I believe.
It's hard to tell. It looks pretty cool last night.
Yes, it's on its way. I think it's supposed to be Friday, but that may mean, midnight tomorrow night too.
Yeah.
or a minute after midnight. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You can do that ceremony at any time of the day or night, any part of the year. But we just choose the moon as a marking point.
Isn't that fairy tale where the magic stick turns around and it beats
the
She's down the road.
Yeah. Anybody want the stick? Watch out. Dangerous. Is there anything else?
Nothing very important, but I've never been a rat or a snake or a water buffalo, so I don't know how that I might not be important in you. You mentioned, I don't know. I'm kidding. But, you know, you say we're humans are more important than animals.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
You said that
we're meeting each other.
You said a meeting another human was the ultimate
Really expert.
Yes.
Like my nature. I guess I misheard you.
I see what you mean. I see what you mean. But I meant it on another level.
Yeah.
Because of course we meet snakes and water buffaloes as our brothers and sisters.
Okay.
For sure.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. It's not even that.
Well, it is important. What you're trying to say is important.
We don't know.
That we don't make that distinction.
Yeah. Well.
On the other hand, I still would make that distinction. there's something. I'll consider it. I'm not sure. When we look deeply, Thay talks a lot about looking deeply at anything. It's looking back. That's what our looking is allowing what we're looking at to look back. So it's really up to us to receive that look. That's what's called menju, face-to-face meeting, face-to-face transmission.
Yeah, I understand that. I guess I was misunderstanding something. I was hearing something different.
Yes.
So I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
About communicating with each other as people.
Yes.
As more than. But I thought you were saying something.
Putting them down.
In relation to what Lori was saying.
Yeah. Yes.
Which I have very.
Oh, I know you do.
Huge experience on that path. So
I know. Yeah.
All our relations.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. Oh, I know. I know, it's true in what we're doing too. I mean, that's what I've been talking about. It's all our brothers and sisters, aunts and cousins, and it's actually all us. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you all.